30 Rock debuts Seinfeld Vision, Castlevania conducts its first gorgeous symphony, and oh, how we all wish Kirk Cameron would switch bodies with Dudley Moore today, this week on 30 2010.
30 2010, surprises are awaiting us. We're going to the 80s and the 90s and 2000s. 30 2010.
Welcome all to another fun-filled episode of 30 2010, the internet's weekly look back 30, 20, and 10 years ago to this very week. This week being September 29th through October 5th, we will be looking at all of the television, movies, news, music from 1987 to 1997, 2007. Pull up a chair, open the portals to the past, try and remember where you were when all this fun stuff came out. I'm Chris Antista. Who else is with us?
Dave Tunahead Rudden. Mm-hmm.
Key Party All-Star Diana Goodman.
Weird rabbity thing, Matthew J.
Man, and this is just, is this like historically a crappy week for movies?
Yeah, we're
at the end of the summer.
I mean, we're past summer, we're just starting to get into the prestige stuff and then heading into holidays.
And even that, even stuff. Like the Oscar season thing was kind of a later thing. Like that's like more like... Really?
No, it's been that way for quite a while.
I think, maybe movies are just like, let's get out of the way of even the second season of the TV season, because everyone wants to know how those plot threads that they just barely touched in the first episode of the season, how they're going.
Everyone's listening to the radio.
Yeah. We have some insight. We do no radio news on this. Good Lord.
Oh, no.
Good
What's
Lord.
Howard Stern doing?
He asked some starlet Shami Boobies.
Who's going to...
Shami Boobies.
Who's getting fired from
that? Little guy that. We know what never talked about was Paul Hart. yes, but we will talk about more of that. There's a bunch of fun TV, at least, and some really notable stuff, and a weird, weird long-standing show that straddles two decades, so stay tuned for that. You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
How's your weekend, Dave?
Me and my girlfriend had a day where we did a bunch of chores with her. Her dog was with us, just because the thing that we've been meaning to do is to get her dog's nails clipped. We give them the dog to the groomers, who are, by the way, coated in fur, which I should have expected.
The groomers?
The groomers are covered in fur, because that's what
they're
do.
They're shaving dogs and
but
stuff.
It's like,
oh, but not like Italian.
Yeah. No. They're
what?
Just...
They're but not they just got, hairy people, Chris.
They both I had to check.
This guy's got like a ball cap and t-shirt and jeans, and every inch of it is covered in fur.
Covered in hair.
And I'm like... I know you probably it would be waste to use lint roller all the time, but it's like, is there not something you could do to, like, when I come in, not be so like
one of
oh.
your complaints is how unkempt the groomers were.
That well, that and also
you become full
also,
San Francisco.
When he's ringing me up, and I see he has a soda can right next to the register, and I'm not a big germaphobe. Like I'll sometimes use the 5-second rule, but like there was a wad of fur right on top of the Coke can. Which made me wonder, why do you even have an open can of Coke?
Yes, is Clarence Thomas in here trying to make another joke?
It was just like that. I almost had a Leo. I'm like, that's disgusting.
If it's his can, I don't see a problem with it.
But there's dog fur on it.
Like if you brought a can in,
and it's congealing with all of the
like I said,
high fructose corn syrup. So
get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly full length, uncensored, and ad free Patreon exclusive podcast, as well as full length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at Patreon. patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again. As always, we start in 1987. Once again, we are talking about the week of September 29th through August through October 5th. You can't travel that. That's way too big a window. But 1987, Bonfire of the Vanities by Tom Wolfe is released. And I can barely remember that except as a little kid, it was in every single home.
Yep.
Wow.
And it was a huge book.
Yeah.
It was the firm of its day.
The firm of its day, with also a bad movie.
No, the firm movie is way better than Bonfire of the Vanities. Okay. Bonfire of the Vanities is awful.
I don't know anything about Bonfire of the Vanities, actually.
It's very topical. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, written by Tom Wolfe, who's often very meticulous in his writing.
Mm-hmm. Has cool hats.
He wears great suits. He's a fun guy. And it's about, like, a yuppie couple that accidentally hit a black teenager with their car, and then sort of the fallout. Then there's, like, a tabloid guy who starts going after them, and it's about class and race in 87 New York.
Sounds like Shortcuts.
It's like a fun comedy.
Yeah.
We also have a bunch of movies I've never heard of. In the Belly of an Architect with Brian Dennehy again.
Wow, man. Having a big couple weeks.
Yeah. What a busy man. Big Shots, written by Joe Esterhaus.
Don't even look at me. I know. Sorry, Belly of an Architect, a Peter Greenaway movie, so it's going to be weird.
Anna,
I prefer Big Shots Part 2. Yeah.
Anna, a movie with Sally Kirkland and Paulina Pork. Next movie.
Poriskova, one of those beautiful women of the 80s.
Poriskova. Slam Dance with Virginia Madsen. Tom Holson, Mary Elizabeth. Oh, my God.
Mastrantonio.
Mastrantonio. Good old Italian. I should be able to get it right.
Virginia Madsen in two movies this week?
I can't. Oh, yes. It looks like that. But we will get to that in a moment. Near Dark.
Oh, this is one I want to talk about.
Please.
I love Near Dark.
I don't know anything about it, too. You got to fill me in. Oh. I'm really bad at the movies this week.
Okay, I believe this is not quite Kathryn Bigelow's first movie, but it's sort of her. It's definitely her breakout movie. And
Near Dark
can,
30.
Ha. And, I mean, you can tell that she is still with James Cameron at this point because it's got Lance Hendrickson and Bill Paxton and all those regulars. But it's a Western-ish modern-day vampire movie where vampirism is sort of treated like drug addiction.
I think I have seen this.
It's really good.
Holy shit.
And we were talking about Heroes, the stars Adrian Pazdar from Heroes.
Wow.
And it's about
20
like,
years later.
He gets with this vampire chick and she turns him and he's like jonesing for stuff and sweaty and crazy. And then he falls in with this gang of vampires and it is so fucking good.
Does she bite him on the dick? Wait, that's Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Caleb Colton no longer belongs to our world. We give him a week, see if we can call him one of us. He belongs to hers.
But you have to learn to kill.
He belongs to theirs.
I don't
want to kill.
Oh, man. Lance Henderson and Bill Paxton both slaughter in this movie. I mean, there's some graphic. There's a scene where they just take on a whole bar. It is great. Great movie.
Yeah. I can't see how this probably was just overshadowed by The Lost Boys, which came out a couple months ago. It's like, that's the teen drama vampire movie that everyone remembers.
Yeah, but this is skirting into October, though. This one's that Halloween money. And I'm doing the whole Nightmare on Elm Street thing at elmstreetnightmare.com. Check that out every Tuesday with me and Lizzie talking about every Nightmare on Elm Street movie. I'm dying for some like really like not only fun horror, but heavy 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this looks like a music video. And I think as I've seen the Bigelow music video, that's also awesome with Bill Paxton in it. But
it reminds me of Streets of Fire.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
But with Streets of Vampire.
Streets of Vampire. Also this week, never heard of this, Zombie High.
It's Zombie High with Drop Dead Guys.
You said you hated this place.
Well, I've changed my mind.
Brainless girls.
You think you could heat it up a little bit?
You had a nasty little accident. You could have been killed.
And teachers who make an everlasting impression.
You live forever, and the students get lobotomized?
This looks so fucking fun.
It is so dumb. But yeah, we got Virginia Madsen again, Sherilyn Fenn before Twin Peaks, and baby Paul Feig.
Yeah, in the movie. But like, I was like, did he write it? No, he's an actor in it.
Yeah, he's an actor.
Wow.
He's an actor,
maybe ahead of, I don't know, like the zombie craze is still at full swing, and this is 30 years ago.
Definitely ahead of its time in that USA Up All Night would still be like 5 or 6 years away. I can only picture Gilbert Gottfried.
But Fatal Attraction is still number one, but I sadly think this is the movie that most people listening
number one in our hearts.
Have seen.
Dr. Jack Hammond had one of the most brilliant minds in the medical community until he and his son...
Hi.
Hi.
...exchanged minds.
Chris? Dad?
There's no such thing as a brain transference.
Now,
the doctor.
See ya.
Is back in high school.
It's really not cool to scam on your own son's date. The main bronchi and its branch.
Jesus.
Yeah, the vice versa, starring Judge Ryan.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's not Freaky Friday or 18 Again or whatever other movie they remake every 7
this
years.
This kicked off, like, they had, of course, Freaky Friday, mm-hmm. like, the last decade, but. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this kicked off like 2 or 3 years of a lot of these movies. There was this 18 Again, mm-hmm. Vice Versa. You could say Big is kind of also like that, except you don't ever. I always posit that Tom Hanks did change bodies with someone. You just never see them.
You don't see the other side of that story.
That's a separate movie.
Wow, you're saying that guy's like floating brainless out there somewhere, yeah. wondering where his body went. Yeah.
And oh also the one with George Burns. I keep forgetting. No, that's 18 Again, which is also that's the most fucked up one because George Burns is in a coma.
They made another one of these movies with like Zac Efron, right? I forget what it's called.
Well,
Matthew
Perry just got de-aged.
Okay,
that's 19
Again.
18 Again, I believe.
No.
19 Again.
17
Again.
The point is, they remake this movie a lot.
It's Matthew Perry.
So this is like father, like son. Yeah. Kirk Cameron and Dudley Moore.
The father and son switch places. I thought we did some laser time where I tried to look and see what is the device that causes these people to switch bodies. Because it's always like, just don't do this as fast as possible and don't think about it.
The lightning bolt or a totem or mm-hmm. something. Yeah.
It is Native American base. I do remember that. Yeah, it is based in an old Indian.
But we did an episode about movies that had similar premises that came out around the same time. Mm-hmm. And this of course has 3 other movies that are just like it. So, like it was like the highlight of the episode that we.
Please go watch Near Dark instead of
yes,
this.
Yes.
But
please.
Also, watch the other 3 body switch movies because this one is not as good.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
How could you say that?
I remember
Kirk Cameron is a dweeb, and Dudley Moore is like, I wouldn't want to jump. You give me $1 million, I wouldn't jump into that guy's body. I'd immediately have liver failure.
I was just going to say, to get that guy's liver?
Yeah.
Oh, man. But it's almost impossible
It's a piano.
It's almost impossible you live from 1987 to 1994 and didn't see this movie somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
It was all over the fucking place.
Yeah, it was on something.
Also, it's got Sean Astin and Catherine Hicks in it. But we got to move into TV because a very special debut
for
somebody.
A lot of weird debuts this week. Sorry, 30-something debuted this week.
Yep.
Which
my parents love this goddamn show.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they were the perfect demo for
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Right?
You know, it's about like married couples mm-hmm. with young kids and then trying to make it. And there's some soap opera-y stuff. And, you know, the wacky sister who's, you know, unlucky in love and kind of artsy. And then have the... I mean, it has a good cast. Had a lot of people that have been around a long ass time.
I only know the show from jokes David Spade would make.
Yeah.
Really? Here's how I know the show. One of my first obsessions ever in my life, something I could obtain, the first issue of Mad Magazine I ever bought had a 30-something parody. I've never seen the show, but I have the Mad Satire almost memorized.
30-some blech.
Yeah. Guy walking around in a robe. I don't know what
30
was...
30-bum things.
It did introduce the world to a young... Well, actually, no, not that young, but Timothy Busfield, who was a Poindexter in the...
Revenge of the Nerds
series. But this is where he broke through, and then he's had a lot of TV stuff.
He's like a normal guy who can talk and not scream.
On every Aaron Sorkin show, right?
Pretty much. But same creators as My So-Called Life. So there, ties together somehow.
Also this week was the debut of Friday the 13th, the series. Which, how do you make a series out of a movie series, which is just a guy who wears a hockey mask and kills people?
You have it completely unrelated.
Yeah, that's
it's
what I
completely
guess.
Unrelated. I think Jason was dead. No, that's 1984. Jason is dead and gone. The final chapter.
It's set in a, like a secondhand, like, spooky store, and these kids would find things, and then the things would lead to a story happening. And one of them was Jason's mask, and they would find like a candelabra that a ghost lived in, or whatever. And they, you know, you'd spend 11 minutes on the story.
If you've heard me,
so anthology show.
Yeah, if you heard me yell about horror films, I love Halloween 3 because it's like, no, it doesn't always have to be about Michael Myers. We'll just do a awesome Halloween movie, awesome scary movie, anthology movie every single year. I'm like, that should happen. And it should have happened with Friday the 13th because there are too many of those goddamn movies.
Yeah.
And I would be happy if they branched out beyond that. Oddly enough, we're doing that Nightmare show. It went one season longer than Freddy's Nightmares, and Freddy is just inarguably better than Jason.
Wow.
I can't believe
that
happened.
Multiple seasons of Friday the 13th.
Apparently three seasons.
That's crazy.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. But something had even more seasons than both of those is The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson, which had its 25th anniversary air on October 1st, 1987, which was exactly 25 years after Johnny Carson's first hosting gig on The Tonight Show. I didn't get any clips of this.
So even when he was, like, of him being a guest host?
It may have been because that doesn't seem right. That I don't think that the Tonight Show lasted that long.
What? The Tonight Show's been on the air since like the 50s.
No, I mean, like, just with Carson. I don't think he started in 62. I think that maybe 62 was the first time he did it.
Until 92, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Well, anywho, it was 25 years.
It did like 32 years.
I was just asking. I wasn't correcting anyone.
But yeah, there's also something about Saint Elsewhere here.
Saint Elsewhere episode called Moon for the Misbegotten. They had to go out with a warning to different affiliates, and some of them refused to run it because there's a scene where one of the old dudes yells at some corporate guy, "You can kiss my ass, pal," and moons him on TV.
Whoa, we saw a butt on television?
Saw a butt on TV.
An old man's
butt. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. Was it Knight Rider's butt?
No.
Oh.
Wow, so Dennis Franz isn't the pioneer of butts that I thought
he
was.
Not.
But so they were pushing the whole butt thing with, like, because it's called Moon for the Misbegotten. So it was
exactly.
Like, oh, they were like,
they built a show around a butt.
Tonight on St. Elsewhere, a butt.
Yeah. Whose butt? It was a mystery. Will it be Mr. Feeney's butt?
Oh, no.
Will it be that autistic kid's butt?
For maximum gluteus.
It's just two snow globes pushed together.
That was excellent. Jesus Christ. Aww, hope you know St. Elsewhere's ending.
Yeah. I thought it was Denzel Washington's butt.
Aww. Man, a lot of disappointed girls out there.
I'm sure you see his butt in something.
I ain't never going to show my butt. There's a lot of
Disney stuff this week.
Well, this is going to straddle it because we actually moved this from last week to the next segment, but I did want to talk about it. The Wonderful World of Disney airs part one of The Journey of Nat Hagen.
Hey! It's been back in the news lately.
Yeah. Wait, because this is...
Really? Why?
Because Nat Hagen got engaged to Patton Oswalt, and everyone was like, wait, you're engaged to the girl who played Natty Gann? Holy shit!
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yep. I thought you were saying, like, Natty Gann's a real person.
No.
I do
remember. Meredith Salad.
Is that supposed to be a play on words? Natty Gann.
No.
Not again?
No, it's just another lame Disney title. Yeah. There's a ton of those.
Full name, speak up.
Natalie Sue Gann.
Natalie Sue Gann. Where do you live?
I'm not.
Vagrant. Where are your folks?
I'm not sure, but I'm looking for my...
Orphan.
I'm not an orphan.
Put her number one.
I'm no orphan.
Sure, kid, sure.
Journey of Natty Gann.
At least
the name is lame, but still kind of unforgettable. My father was kind of obsessed with Jack London, so anything that took place in snow with wolves, we ended up watching. I know my sister loved this. I actually own. You guys seem mystified by the name. It is on my Disney shelf. I do own this because the Wonderful World of Disney. If you didn't have cable, was a really big part of your life. If you had three channels to look at, most of it adult sitcoms, and then one night a week, it's just like, we're going to air an old Disney movie or a brand new thing just for kids.
For the longest time, it was the only place you could watch Disney movies on TV. Mm-hmm. Like because Disney movies just did not really get played, except later in the 90s, ABC would make a big deal out of it, on this show.
They didn't even do it with the Disney Channel when it first started, but we will talk a little more about that history in the next segment. How about that?
Because
I can't wait to. Want to get you through 1987, people, because that will close out TV there. Because 1987 games, Dave, you have a personal favorite.
Yeah, actually two personal favorites came out the same day, October 1st, 1987. Maniac Mansion came out on the PC.
Hell yeah.
I played this more on the NES, but I love this game. It's like, you take three out of, I think it's seven teenagers into a house to find the character Dave's girlfriend. He's the one that you always have to play as, and he sucks. And I'll say that as a Dave, like, the first time I ever played a game that had the same guy with my name, he was useless.
It wasn't until Dave Mira that you really enjoyed a Dave in a game.
But yeah, just a fun, like, really humorous game. Like the inside of the house,
Gilbert.
Yeah, the inside of the house is like, it's this crazy family that may be dead, and they also have a meteor in there and a bunch of slime creatures.
Ooh. Tentacles.
Tentacles.
A hamster you can put in a microwave.
There's so many different ways you can beat this game. Like, you can make the meteor famous by ghostwriting a book in its name. You can make an album for the meteor, or you can just blow the house up with everybody in it. So, so many different ways to win, and it's just so fun, and it's got a great soundtrack. But speaking of great soundtracks, the NES game Rad Racer came out this same day.
Rad Racer!
Yes, just a square...
I made a joke!
If you didn't play Final Fantasy when it came out, odds are this is the first square game you've ever played, and that's weird.
One of the few square racing games.
Few 3D games. Press the select button on the controller, and you get 3D.
Chocobo racing.
Yeah.
We can say that.
I don't know anyone who actually had the 3D glasses for this game.
I actually have it in box over there. I picked it up at a garage sale.
I'd always rent it, and I'd be like, Well, where's the 3D glasses? Fuck you, kid.
It's,
get out of here.
It's really hard. It's sort of aping Outrun from the arcade.
Oh, yeah. So, like, I didn't realize it back in the day, but it
is. As a kid, I couldn't get very far, and as a teenager to 20-year-old, I rediscovered it, and I just love Rad Racer. You got to be real good.
Have you tried the 3D as an adult?
Oh,
does
course.
It work?
No, well, yeah, it totally works, but it ruins the look of the game.
Yeah.
Because the game is like...
it goes all weird and red and blue.
It's just one of those really pretty 80s games with palm trees and fucking Ferrari in it. But
a lady walks by and gets
super
in your car with you.
Probably most famous for Nintendo dorks. In the movie The Wizard, it's the movie Lucas demonstrates the power glove with.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
Yes, he's playing Rad Racer.
Does it control the way he does it?
I think so.
Well, you could program the power glove to play.
Like
what you're secretly doing
wheel.
When you add in a power glove code is you're programming it to just... react
this
to certain button presses. You could figure it out. So you could program it to do anything, but I think it came with a guide, like for Rad Racer, do this.
Yeah.
So it knows moving your arm like this is left and right.
Okay.
But it was super easy to program for because the NES has what?
Six
button combinations?
Also, Rad Racer, you surprisingly don't have to move all that much. You're driving straight on a road. You just have to do minor corrections.
It was about
here and
when to use your turbo, how to build that shit up. You have to get your time. It's a very arcadey, but there weren't a lot of racing games on the NES, so it was very notable. And it's one of the coolest 80s things with the word red in it. So,
And we have a couple of games that are just generally listed as October 1987 games. We had someone ask, by the way, why don't you just space them out over a month? But, why? That's just arbitrary. I wouldn't know which ones to put when. And then
also, we don't want to talk about any of these games.
And when Kotaku makes an anniversary post about Lunar Pool at the beginning of the month, we don't want to be caught with our pants down.
There you go.
So, releasing this month on the NES was Alpha Mission, Lunar Pool, and Zanac. I don't really have anything to say about any of that. Except for Lunar Pool, which is Pool on the Moon.
They do sound like a bunch of generic 80s arcade game names.
Yeah.
I usually have to play Zanuck at least once to get out of bed in the morning.
And that's it for the games.
That is it for the games. Moving into music, look at that. The Uplift Mofo Party Plan by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
You made that up.
It sounds made up because
three
Red Hot Chili Peppers albums, and that's not one of them. But it's their third.
Yes, their third. I did not realize they went back that far.
87, their third album? Jesus.
Yes.
We should. Oh, it has... I Fight Like a Brave was in some movie, but that's on the album.
It's been so long of nobody with taste caring about Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes.
A lot of their mid-90s.
ESP by the Bee Gees, Wild Side by Lover Boy, and Wow by Bananarama, and Heaven and Earth by Belinda Carlisle, which will hit the charts later this year. Didn't We Almost Have It All by Whitney Houston is number one. So that is what we shall close out with. R.I.P. Whitney. Well, stay tuned, people. We're bringing your spirits back up in 1997.
Ahoy hoy, everybody, this is Bob Mackey,
Chris Antista,
Henry Gilbert,
and when you're done listening to this, we'd like you to check out Talking Simpsons. It's our chronological exploration of The Simpsons only on the Leisure Time Podcast Network,
where we'll discuss why Barney is the MVP of Season 3.
Whatever you say, Mom!
When we try to figure out what every reference means.
Weren't you one of the little rascals?
And where we'll tell you how to avoid the poison donut.
There is a poisoned one, isn't there, Smithers?
No, sir. I discussed this with our lawyers. They consider it murder.
Damn their oily hides!
For all this and more, listen to Talking Simpsons every Wednesday at TalkingSimpsons.com or wherever you find your podcasts.
Coming in with Robbie Williams, Let Me Entertain You.
We will, Robbie.
The ego has landed.
This is one like with Backstreet Boys where it got confusing because he was huge in Europe.
Yeah,
because
from
he was
Take
with
That.
Take That. And so he actually put out two albums over there. This is the first one, Life Through a Lens. And then they combined, kind of took the best of each and released it in the U.S. in 99 as The Ego Has Landed.
Move Your Body.
That happened with the Beatles.
What a rock DJ.
Yeah.
It was a tough sell because Take That wasn't that big here. So,
right.
so somebody like, it's Take It's like Take That, that band you've never heard of, but with four less people.
Was this song ever used in a montage of a bunch of young white actors wearing thin ties robbing a bank?
Lots of spinning cameras around Las Vegas bachelor parties.
Yeah.
Sounds
two guys
perfect
like
for
hand
that.
Each other a business card nonchalantly walking down the street.
It was 1997's How You Like Me Now, that awful song used in everything.
Yeah.
Almost but, ruins the fighter.
Yeah, this also it was tough call between using this or Angels because Angels was so fucking omnipresent in Europe around Christmas. I think it was the Christmas single that year. It was
because you were there.
I was over there at this point.
Do you mean the country song, How Do You Like Me Now?
Mm-mm. No.
Oh, okay. Because I sang that song in my underwear yesterday.
Mm-mm.
Nice. But yeah, so I was over there. So my dates on stuff and my knowledge of things is going to get weird. But because I don't like boy bands and I hadn't heard of Take That. So I was just sort of like, oh, who is this guy? Whatever.
I thought he was great.
And then he came and played at my college and we could tell he was there because all these like 15-year-old girls suddenly show up on campus. Like, oh my God. And I was in the newspaper office, which was right over the venue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to listen to all the concerts for free. And I was like, well, this guy's good.
Yeah. Like, I don't dislike his music. And he was funny. Like, he was a funny dude. Not very serious. I'm now missing Robbie Williams. Another.
Yeah,
but his new release, Life Through a Lens, came out this week. And Bridges of Babylon by the Rolling Stones. Jesus Christ. Levitate by the Fall. Cymbals by KMFDM. Too bad Brett can't be here to chime in. Okay. 4 Minute Mile, the debut of the Get Up Kids. Oh boy. Long Stretch of Lonesome by Patti Loveless. One Day It'll All Make Sense by Common.
Come on.
And Portishead's eponymous album, Urban Hymns by
Urban
The Verb.
Urban Hymns by The Verb. What do you think we're going out with,
oh,
kids?
Oh, goodness.
Wow, sweet. The Verve, what did they steal a song from?
Rolling Stones.
So they had this album the same week. That's crazy. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And, oh, God, the Get Up Kids. Does that describe my little car in high school? Jesus Christ. But in news for 1997, September 29th through October 5th, Underworld by Don DeLillo is published, a book I have purchased twice and never read.
Is that what became the Kate Beckinsale
movies? No.
Oh, okay.
No. Oh, God, our book guy is going to be really pissed at you.
I'm pissed because I was racing you to that joke.
Oh.
And I lost.
But so as not to embarrass ourselves further, we can move into the 1997 movies.
We don't read.
I know very little about. No, I've seen some of these. Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control, an Errol Morris documentary on...
Yep.
What, just four unique engineers?
Yeah, but it's just weird folks.
Yeah, but that's just his style, to interview kind of people who would look non-interesting on paper or in person. Errol Morris will stick a camera in front of and make a documentary out of.
Yeah, I still don't think I've seen a bad Errol Morris documentary. Yeah. Always recommend him.
The Floridians love him for Vernon, Florida. The Ice Storm with Kevin Kline, Sigourney Weaver, and Elijah Wood. I know I saw this.
Directed by Ang Lee.
Ang Lee.
Second week in a row.
And this is the family where just a ton of bad shit happens to them.
Yeah.
Yes. It's set in the 70s.
Yeah.
It's a real bummer, but it's cool.
Mm-hmm. It's beautifully, I mean, it's Ang Lee's always just visually gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Really good performances. Elijah Wood, I think, is really good in this.
Yeah.
And so is what's her name? Christina Ricci.
Yeah.
Is really good.
I think my favorite genre is made in the 90s, set in the 70s. Like, there's so many of those movies, and they're always super fun.
What a fall movie
for Kevin Kline. Yeah. This and In and Out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought you meant, like, what a descent.
No, that would come with Wild Wild West.
Kevin Kline's on his way out.
A movie he is legitimately great in.
And then this movie, which feels like an insane fever dream for me. Is this Oliver Stone coming back after Natural Born Killers?
Look at that cast.
Bud, what happened to my car?
I don't know, but it's the reason that I'm living here, and you're just passing through.
You're not still upset over that little love tap, are you?
Can't live with him, can't live without him.
Can't live with him, can't shoot him.
Would you?
Would I what?
Would you kill her?
Did you kill Jennifer Lopez in Oliver Stone's U-Turn?
Nick Nolte looks like a naked mole rat in that trailer. What is going on with everything about him?
Sean Penn, Jennifer Nolte, Lopez, Nick Nolte, Billy Bob Thornton, John Voight, Powers Booth. Like, what an insane cast in a movie that is so thoroughly unremarkable.
Yeah.
I remember I came back from Costa Rica, and this is the first thing I watched when I came back to the country.
And you were like, I need to make a U-turn back to Costa Rica.
And this is coming from a kid who, man, Natural Born Killers is like the coolest movie ever. Shot in the same style. Yeah, I don't remember much about U-turn.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, the style is so heavy, as Oliver Stone was doing at the time. Mm-hmm. Not as heavy as Natural Born Killers, but it's sort of... You know, like a yuppie's car breaks down in the shitty town and he gets pulled into everyone's craziness.
Yeah. But a bunch of people playing to the fucking rafters in this movie. That was Billy Bob Thornton as the redneck you heard earlier on in the film. We also have, look at this, one of my favorite comedians in one of her first starring roles, I think, in a film.
I don't mean to be rude, but who are you?
I'm the local matchmaker. You want to take up her test drive?
In your dreams, Patty.
If you want a real matchmaker, love, call me.
This isn't a humiliate the tourist scenario, is it?
No.
Hello, I am representing an American senator.
You're from America, aren't you?
Haha, yeah. Who's in search of his Irish ancestors who moved to Boston.
That's such a weird concept for a movie.
Yeah.
That she plays an aide to a senator who wants to find his family lineage so he can use it as something to campaign off of?
Right.
Huh. Okay.
So she goes to a wacky town in Ireland while they're having a matchmaking festival?
This is from that.
You don't
years.
Have to pay Irish people to fork.
This is when we were trying to get Jeanine Garofalo to be like a romantic lead.
Yeah,
it was weird.
Years. Like Truth About Cats and Dogs is what, like a year or two later?
Yeah, it's weird. I love Jeanine Garofalo.
Also, this is like
I love Truth About
a couple
Cats
of months after Romeo Michelle's High School Reunion, which she plays a decent part in.
Yeah, a small part in.
So I was like, this she should be in Hollywood movies, and it didn't really take. Then Mystery Men next year.
Mystery Men into like Wet Hot American Summer, into like her TV stuff is where she really starts to figure out like
what she.
This is my niche. I'm just going to be like the coolest alt comedy lady, which she already was. Like she was very famous as a stand-up. Mm-hmm. Like she's in that Simpsons episode.
But
it's when they were trying to make a romantic lead, and it just didn't really take.
Yeah,
but I like her as the sarcastic romantic lead.
Yeah.
That's perfectly in her wheelhouse. Yeah. I think this is. I mean, all the reviews of this are sort of like, it's fine, it's sweet, whatever. She's really fun.
I'll make out with you, I guess.
I saw that the Irish didn't care for it.
Yeah, I'm sure they don't. Well, I think one of the co-writers is Grant Linnem from Father Ted.
Ooh.
So
and the
I'm
IT
sure,
crowd and Black Books.
Yeah,
and a bunch
I'm
of
sure
great
he
stuff.
He did a nice Irish polish on it.
But number one at the box office, solidifying Ashley Judd as the theatrical Lifetime movie king. Kiss the Girl.
Active Alex Cross is an expert on the criminal mind.
The board shows eight missing. I bet these women are alive.
And he's just discovered one advantage every predator fears. Someone who got away.
I'm the only person who's seen this guy. Take me with you.
Morgan Freeman, Ashley Judd.
Killing's not his ulterior motive. This guy's a collector.
Come on!
Hold it!
Kiss the Girls.
That's an Alex Cross movie?
Yeah.
Alex Cross, the character from James Patterson novels?
It's the first Alex Cross movie.
Cool. Were there any between that and Alex Cross?
Yeah, there's Along Came a Spider.
That's an Alex Cross movie?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
This was,
I knew it was a James Patterson book because I worked at a bookstore.
Is that Tyler Perry eventually played?
Yes.
Yeah. Morgan Freeman and Madea have played the same character.
This did well. It made a bunch of money, so they made a sequel.
And I hated
this
movie.
No idea those movies were related. That's cool.
I hated this movie because it was something I thought, in my little world, brought upon by the success of Usual Suspects. Usual Suspects is a really important movie to me. I know it might not hold up that well, but really, really fun, well orchestrated. And tied in together by a big old ending where it's revealed this guy has been this person the whole time. And then after that, Hollywood tried to do it a lot. But somebody had a good term for it. I thought it was the trap door ending where the killer could be anybody in the cast. And this one is the stupidest.
Which means that it can't be a real mystery because you're not allowed to figure it out.
It could be absolutely anyone. And like this one, it turns out, I told you he'd be coming back. Carrie Elwes. Carrie Elwes is like the third lead and the fellow detective. Morgan Freeman's detective friend turns out to be the murderer. And you're just like, for real? What the fuck is this?
You worked all those years for that?
Yes.
Is it like the Murder, She Wrote problem where just like the highest billed person that doesn't seem to be affecting the plot? It's totally him.
Carrie Elwes. And he still looks too much like Wesley to be a serial killer. I did not buy it.
That's a good...
I was just saying, like, you randomly stopped that trailer right at the end where this has to be one of the first movies that had the URL for the movie's website right there in the bottom. It's kissthegirls.com, and I just went to it, and the domain kissthegirls.com is for sale.
Oh, okay. Jesus. I expected a flag from my parental filter.
I just want to mention, because we talked so much last week about Family Guy, that there's a very good joke on Family Guy where they're watching, I think, Law and Order, and they're setting up the episode, and then as the credits are going by, one of them says, like, special guest Dean Cain, and the cop in the episode just kind of points to it, and he's like, it's him.
That's him. But that wraps up the movies for 1997. Hope you liked them more than I did. This is such a stupid debut that I'm so happy about.
Those movies may have not rocked, but Cleveland rocks. Because the Drew Carey Show debuted its third new theme, and the one that most people associate with the show, Cleveland Rocks.
All this energy calling me back where it comes from. It's such a crude attitude. It's back where it belongs. All the little chicks with the crimson lips go Cleveland rocks, Cleveland rocks.
I don't know why we keep talking about this so much.
Because it's one of the best shows of the decade.
Because of my, I got a TV antenna and I'm uploading stupid YouTube videos for this goddamn job, and I can't stream Netflix or Sling or anything like that. So I turn on my antenna. Drew Carey is always on. I'm like, I'm not watching this. This song comes on. I'm like, all right,
yeah.
All right, I can stick around.
And this is kind of when the Drew Carey show had the first two seasons were good, but this is when it starts really embracing like absurdity, and they would have like the Find the Incorrect Things episode, and like
Whose Line
like,
Is It Anyway crossovers. Yeah, he met Daffy Duck in an episode. Yeah. It was Drew Carey's really show.
Donald Trump, who could forget?
It's a great, hilarious show. Well, that's the New York episode.
No, it holds up surprisingly well. I don't think it was like a mega popular show when it was on, but in syndication, it's found an audience.
There were a couple years where ABC really pushed it.
Yeah.
But then towards the end, they realized it was never really going to catch on. Mm-hmm. And then towards the last like season, it was like on Saturday nights and they played like three. It was on the summer on like a weekend night, like Friday or Saturday. And they played like 2 to 3 episodes a night.
Wow.
So they burned out the last season in like 3 weeks.
Jesus. And if you listen to Laser Time, our other show, which is topic based, we had two topics where Drew Carey came up. One is where we had you guys, I think everybody on the mic and who was listening, vote on your preferred version of the theme song. Drew Carey show having three theme songs.
Yeah.
That being the best one. But then I
Moon
think
Over Parma and 5 o'clock Night.
Five o'clock world. And then I think Brett had handled Songs You Didn't Know Were Covers. And that is the Presidents of the United States of America, the Lump People, not George Washington, doing a cover of Cleveland Rocks. It is a very sincere song from the 70s about how cool Cleveland should look in people's eyes, but never will. But what I was surprised to learn while looking at this, and I couldn't play it for you, the intro to the Drew Carey show is part of a 3-minute, very lavish music video featuring everybody in a ton of cameos.
Yeah, because I think the first time it played,
they played the whole thing. Yeah,
it's really long and really cool, and I don't know why that shit gets me like pumped for some reason.
It's a great song, and it's also a great intro.
Because like, they're all hauling ass out of work building. It's fucking great.
Yeah, because that's the whole show. Like much like we recently did an episode about high school and college movies, and most of the movies you picked were about the catharsis of getting away from the thing the movie's about. That's what Drew Carey.
The intro.
About.
It's hard to see in the intro you usually see, but it's like it's everybody running screaming out of work.
Yeah.
They run straight to the ATM and pull out money, and then they run straight to a tailgate party and go out and party all night.
Yeah,
and like it's just a fun fucking music video. I never saw it
because it's very Roseanne-y, where it's about adults trying to have fun, and also adults being in that weird space where it's like, okay, I'm not married, but I don't get to have fun and get drunk as much anymore. Except my friends are kind of deadbeats, so I do.
Yeah, so we do. We're constantly drinking beer or inventing our own Four Loko years beforehand,
and he's got a very realistic house. For a guy of his stature in that part of the country, and I always appreciate that in a TV show, especially because we talked about Full House last week.
Speaking of realism, The Adventures of Sam and Max, Freelance Police.
Yes!
Debuts on Fox. I don't remember the cartoon lasting all that long.
It didn't last that long. But
it didn't, but it was very good.
It won a Gemini Award for Best Animated Series of that year, but it was canceled before, when it received
it. From a long line, another thing we just talked about was Scud the Disposable Assassin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we talked in that episode about how every cool black and white comic book from the 90s got an animated series except Scud. And this is another one, except usually they were like on MTV and they tried to adapt the look of it but couldn't animate it very well. This was a kid's show, so a lot of money got put into it, and it looks gorgeous.
It looks really good.
I think it's also like Fox Kids on like its last, 2 or 3 years where they're just like, what do we do? We don't have Animaniacs anymore.
And it's a Nelvana joint. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Canadian animation.
Sam and Max, by the way, that's a dog and a rabbity thing.
Rabbity thing that
solve crimes based on
Freelance police.
Freelance police.
So they didn't work for the police department. People went to them. They were private detectives, but they called themselves freelance police so they could be like cops.
Yeah.
It was also turned into a LucasArts game we just talked about.
Well, I think if I'm not mistaken, the origins were Steve Purcell created it. He worked at Lucasfilm and in the internal magazine started drawing comics
of
Sam and Max.
Much like Ren and Stimpy, he worked for another company, drew these characters, people liked them, and then they were like, you should make this into its own
thing.
But
he's working at LucasArts and like, we could make a Star Wars, Indiana Jones game, who knows, Willow or Labyrinth, and they're just like, fuck it, Sam and Max, and it became one of the most revered, charming adventure games of that entire generation.
The thing I wanted to mention earlier about Maniac Mansion is that Ron Gilbert and those guys moving toward this is times when video games started to not just be funny, mm-hmm. but there is a sense of humor that's a video game sense of humor mm-hmm. that almost entirely comes from LucasArts because mm-hmm. they're mm-hmm. the only games that are really funny. Usually mm-hmm. when a video game is funny, it's like jokes about how like you hit the B button. What's a B button? Mm-hmm. You know, but these games genuinely had great jokes were made by great comedians mm-hmm. that were very funny.
Yeah, I read a book by our buddy Rob Smith who wrote about the history of LucasArts, and it was just Lucas, I want to create an awesome game company and you're not allowed to make Star Wars or Indiana Jones mm-hmm. games. So mm-hmm. I'm going to put a dickload of money behind this mm-hmm. and you have to come up with an original IP. And they did, and you're kind of seeing yeah. a resurgence of yeah. Day of the Tentacle and what is it, Full Throttle? Is that out mm-hmm. yet?
Yeah, that came out.
Yeah, really neat history of LucasArts. That book is really, really great. How yeah. LucasArts has its fingers in the creation of like AOL mm-hmm. and online gaming in general. Mm-hmm. But this is a premiere. We moved this from last week because I thought it'd be fun to mention. And I personally love this because last week in '97, mm-hmm. the Wonderful World of Disney comes back.
Returns after a seven-year hiatus.
However, since it's a program that's technically been running since 1954, mm-hmm. it's one of the longest-running programs on television. That is not fair to say at all, because it has not run consistently. If you're being kind, you could call it an anthology show, because it's different every time. Mm. It has really cool stuff, but it was built very much to pimp Disneyland. It was televised advertisement for Disneyland to finance Disneyland starting in 1954. It's how ABC and Disney got in bed with
one
another.
The beginning of their relationship, which would lead to Disney buying ABC.
Yes, yes, very much. But it's also it's one of the most longest running shows that has also appeared on all big three networks. Mm-hmm. Wow. It has appeared on ABC, CBS, and NBC under different titles, Magical World of Disney. But it started with Walt coming
just
out there.
Called Disneyland.
Hello, folks. I'm here looking over this model of Disneyland. Mm-hmm. And it went from that. I watch Turner Classic Movies will occasionally throw old episodes up mm-hmm. if they're airing a movie. And I watched the whole 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea movie, and then there's an episode of Disneyland, and it's just, and here's us shooting underwater, and it's just music for 20 minutes and behind the scenes shots
yeah.
in black and white yeah. of filming 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. That's what the show was.
If
sometimes.
You've never seen this, but you've seen Iron Man 2, mm-hmm. you know this, because in Iron Man 2, when mm-hmm. Tony Stark's dad, they find that video of him explaining the Stark convention,
yeah.
that is straight up riffing on Walt Disney coming on TV to being like, please give me money so we can make yeah. this thing.
If you've been
it's,
to...
You know, we're calling it Epcot. Yeah. Yeah. Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow.
I'd like to introduce wow. you to a little man
I'm
named Kurt
dying.
Russell. I think he's going to be a big, big star. Yeah. I yeah. need to go smoke now.
Yeah, I want to say
Tinkerbell.
I want to say Disney Channel also used to rerun these.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I remember seeing one like really late at night. They'd be on at like 2 a.m. And
Walt Disney, they called it.
Thank you.
I watched that.
But yeah, because I worked a night job, so like 2-3 a.m. Mm-hmm. I'm home, and it's like, let's see what's going on at Carnation Gardens. Oh, look, it's the little Osmonds. Like, oh, that little Dottie, he's 4 years old. He sure can sing. I'm like, fuck! This is weird!
They sold these on DVD for a while. I did put some stuff up on our YouTube channel. There was a fantastic Mars and Beyond episode. There's some of it on our YouTube channel, and it's just a look at what we think Mars looks like, or what we want Mars to look like, and how we'll travel to Mars, and are there robots there? But it's all... It's one of the most animation, some of the most custom animation that this show ever received. And it was off the air for a long time. I said that earlier in the segment. We didn't have cable, so our VCRs were set to record this. And this is, I would pretty much watch The Wonderful World of Disney all week, mm-hmm. including a bunch of old movies like Natty Gann, Kurt Russell, and Follow Me, Boys.
Did you mention that this is the beginning of Michael Eisner hosting
in,
it?
So, no. Yes. Once it, is this when it started?
Yes.
No, not 97.
When it came back.
No, he did that way beforehand. He introduced their acquisition of the Muppets. I downloaded somewhere. I want to put it on the internet. They introduced the new season of DuckTales as Super DuckTales, and it's just Michael Eisner riding around the park with Launchpad McQuack and Scrooge McDuck, mm-hmm. and he looks miserable. Remember, he's the head of the company.
The most famous... The most famous episode of the show overall, I would say, is the Wonderful World of Color episode where Ludwig von Drake teaches you why color is so important, why you should buy a color TV,
show,
basically.
The show had its roots in black and white, and when color television started, it started the Wonderful World of Color. If you go to, what is it, California Adventure, the Wonderful World of Color, that song you hear is from this Disneyland TV show, mm-hmm. which returns this week in 97.
I would like to know if, I mean, because they're doing this to pimp out Disneyland, did they do all of the, like, really shitty sponsored things that were in Tomorrowland originally? So it's like, it's the Hall of Aluminum Fame.
Yeah.
It's the Monsanto House of the Future that's just made out of plastic.
It's just a big plastic house.
Yeah,
we had to use chainsaws to cut it up and get rid of it.
There's absolutely a bit of that, but being as, I have a space and beyond collection of when they're just talking about space, because Walt Disney and Ward Kimball, who headed up the episodes, are really interested in space. But TWA was a big sponsor in Tomorrowland.
So there's the moon until we went to the moon, then it became
there's a little bit
Mars.
Of sponsorship, but they're also bringing on like super boring Russian engineers to like introduce these lavishly animated pieces of what space travel might look like from the eyes of the 1950s. And to me, like, smoke a bowl, pour some whiskey. That's what I'm watching at midnight. It makes me really happy. But I do love the Magical World of Disney. I'm very glad it came back. It's still running, I believe. It usually has a special host. Is this what's in the promo here?
This is just a commercial for it from the time.
Yeah.
Coming in September, ABC brings the magic back to Sunday nights. The Wonderful World of Disney premieres September 28th on ABC.
And that's like a bizarre string of trailers. Yeah. It's like First Kid, Herbie the Love Bug, the
Santa
Lion
Claus.
King, the
this
Santa
was,
Claus.
Because this, for a long time, was the only place you could see Disney movies on
Disney
TV.
Disney super pimped their home video thing. I don't want to go into the history of video, but Disney made their videos commercially available, not just the $100 VHSs, $120 VHSs rental stores would get. They wanted you to buy their films on the in a white clamshell box. The only place you could see movies in a pre-streaming world was the Magical World of Disney. And that's where you eventually saw all the Disney films. I think it took Snow White 50 years, but it finally screened in 2010. I think it's its first television debut. Wow. Frozen screened there. I wanted to ask you guys some trivia. There are two Disney movies that never aired on television via the Magical World of Disney or ever. Can you guess what they are? One of them being hella easy.
Song of the South.
Jesus Christ, man. You got that right away. And the other one is just like...
Make Mine Music?
Brother Bear? You think music.
Three Coming
Think
Heroes?
Disney.
Fantasia?
It is Fantasia.
Fantasia.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know why they wouldn't air Fantasia. It seems to set itself up well for commercial interruption.
Yeah, it's already episodic. What the hell? Yeah, it
doesn't make any sense. Stupid. But yeah, it finally came back. Is it? Which intro do you have?
This is From the Time.
From the Time? I would love to hear it.
It might be from 98, but it's definitely From the Time.
Yeah, I wish someday I'll make some article or something collecting all this, but when Disney was acquiring the Muppets, like, it's Michael Eisner, like, we wanted to welcome someone to the Disney family, Kermit the Frog. And
Muppets going to Walt Disney World is one of the best Disney
park
specials.
Yeah, really, really cool.
Don't miss all the fun and excitement on ABC. Take a look.
What a cool intro! Oh, I'm narrating this. 101 Dalmatians live action going into Lady the Tramp animated. Little Mermaid sitting in a rock next to Peter Pan's ship. Dumbo flies through. A Mighty Ducks. Snow White, Beauty the Beast. Toy Story. I think this, and that's Santa Claus, Lion King, Hercules, Aladdin flying up a castle, Hunchback, Mickey and Fantasia. What a lie. But and I believe this airing was for Toy Story. Toy Story making its television debut. And because when you have the Disney Channel, it's like, why aren't they showing their movies? You got to fucking pay.
Yeah, I would think that as a kid all the
pay.
Time. And it would
but they would show the old anthology series episodes and the old cartoon shorts. Mm-hmm. Oh, and if you were a little kid in the 80s, they would repackage Donald Duck shorts and like make a pretend movie out of it. Like, Donald Duck, this is your life and just seven cartoons. Great. Good time. Glad we could talk about that. Had to move it in here. Last week was too packed.
Yeah.
This week, 1997 in games.
For video games, which I don't know if this is a Wikipedia glitch where like a ton of games were listed as either September 31st or October 1st. But maybe that's just how they did releases in 1997. But I am going to... These are a lot of games here. I'm going to list them off if you guys want to mention one or two afterwards and their legacy. Let me start with N64, which had... Clay Fighter 63 and a third, Extreme G, F1 Pole Position 64, Mischief Makers, the platform by Treasure, Top Gear Rally, and Mace the Dark Age.
I loved Extreme G on the N64. It didn't have its own wipeout, so they made one, and it defied gravity.
I preferred the Borat.
Yes. But PS1 had even more games. Croc, Legend of the Gabos, underrated platformer. Bushido Blade, a square fighter with just swords.
This is great, Diana. It's a samurai game, so like if you dishonorably harm your opponents, you lose. So if you draw your sword too early, if you stab someone in the back, you lose.
And most of the fights are like one hit.
Yeah,
one
but
hit
they're
kill.
Super big, so you can like run up a flight of stairs to escape your opponent. Really cool. Fantastic Four.
Awful.
G-Police, pretty good flight sim. IQ Intelligent Cube, a rare game that is a puzzle game where you're basically trying to avoid blocks like rolling out onto you. It's a weird game, but it's also really fun. Nightmare Creature is kind of like a 3D Castlevania that didn't take. Poi Poi, very underrated multiplayer game that's kind of like Bomberman, except you can also throw like rocks and logs at your opponents too. Rampage World Tour, the series being reborn. Mm-hmm. Street Fighter EX Plus Alpha. Clock Tower, a survival horror game that's kind of underrated. Mm-hmm. Mortal Kombat Mythology Sub-Zero. What a terrible idea.
Making the Wolverine origins of Mortal Kombat games.
Yes, a side-scrolling beat-em-up.
With the same sprites.
With the same sprites. Ugh. But the most notable release of this week is Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which came out in America this week with this dialogue that is not... super great.
Die, monster. You don't belong in this world.
It was not by my hand that I'm once again given flesh. I was called here by humans who wish to pay me tribute.
Tribute? You steal men's souls and make them your slaves.
Perhaps the same could be said of all religions.
Ooh, burn.
Your words are as empty as your soul. Mankind ill needs a savior such as you.
What is a man? A miserable little pile of secrets.
Yes. Very famous dialogue.
He's got to start the fight. Hold on.
But enough talk. How about you?
Yeah.
I only finally played this like 2 years ago.
It's great.
It's great. It's great. Up.
So Castlevania, we talked
Symphony
about previously, was...
We talked about Castlevania 2 like a couple weeks ago, 1987.
Yeah, Castlevania being kind of starting out as a horror-themed side-scroller with a lot of interesting item pickups.
Yeah, and, like 2 was an aberration, but 1 and 3 were just like, you do levels.
2 is where it wanted to go. Stage you walked, you backtracked through. Yeah. You opened up things later, a
and
big world.
Were like, yeah, kind of revolted against that because, yeah, there was the 1 and 3, and then there was the one on TurboGrafx, I forget what they called it, but... This is where the series really found its calling and what it was going to be.
Where Metroidvania came from.
The term Metroidvania, where Castlevania took a little bit of Metroid Thunder. And
Jeremy Parrish is cringing right now somewhere.
You got this giant map, and you could eventually unlock certain different parts of the map you couldn't previously, so you'd have to remember where you were and where you haven't been.
Yeah.
Really, really cool. I played this twice in one sitting.
Yeah.
Like, it's you can play it pretty quickly. Of course, you can 100% it. It's a little harder, but like...
Or 108% or whatever it is. That.
I didn't finish the second castle. Mm-hmm.
Upside down castle?
Yeah, because it's the big surprise is like you get to the end, you beat it, and then the castle turns upside down and you have to go back up
and
the
it's
castle.
Like,
good lord, was that a 90s fucking video game trick? We'll just we'll just flip it around.
Like, nowadays, level. Like when that's being previewed, the PR would be like, you got to tell them that this is only half the game. You got to do the secret thing, find a pair of sunglasses so you can see the guy controlling Trevor Belmont. And it's like, yeah, the game is only halfway done when you think it's done. But if that performance wasn't enough for you, Golden Nugget also came out on PS1 this week. It's a casino game, but it had a story mode featuring a sadly, somewhat recently departed actor.
Oh, who's it going to be? I'm placing my bet in my head.
The only one paying attention to a beautiful celebrity on the verge of collapse. Until that moment, my main reason for visiting the Golden Nugget had been the hope of winning enough to... Well, let's just say I drive a Guzzler and have a charming collection of pets. But suddenly I knew a storm was gathering. And this scrap of paper began to look like the only umbrella in the entire Western state.
Jesus, I love Adam West so much. R.I.P. Adam West.
You put it all on red.
Wow.
The fool.
A licensed casino game with a story mode starring Adam West for the PS1. Why
I
want to
play
this
now.
Yeah.
I know. Or at least watch all the cutscenes.
But we have to conclude the 1997 segment of what is it, September 29th through October 5th, but we will return in 2007. But why not take us out with the highly litigious Bittersweet Symphony by The Verve? We'll be right back, people.
Mr. and Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And September 29th to October 5th, wow, this is a busy week. 50 years ago in 1967, all kinds of madness was going on. Thurgood Marshall was sworn in to the Supreme Court as the first minority justice. I believe there's a movie about Marshall coming out pretty soon, but he was an interesting guy. Also, Woody Guthrie passed away. He was 55. All you fascists born to lose. And Titty Cut Follies by Frederick Wiseman was released. Chris is smirking at the title. It's one of the few movies that's actually been banned in the United States. Okay, it's a very graphic, very hard-to-watch movie about people in an insane asylum. And it was banned because privacy issues, really. But yes, Titty Cut Follies, Chris. It's hard to watch, so it's kind of hard for me to recommend. So instead, I also have to go 10 years ahead. I could not believe this. In 1977, so 40 years ago this week, was the first known instance of a high five. It was Glenn Burke and Dusty Baker of the LA Dodgers. And Glenn Burke is an interesting guy because he was one of the first out gay athletes, and it kind of ruined his life. But the high five, there had been given five for a long time. But so give someone a high five this week to celebrate that anniversary. And for an actual recommendation, I will once again pimp out Pictures at a Revolution by Mark Harris, the book. It's available on audio. It's available on book form. It's all about the films in 1967 as we're heading into some more big ones. I really, really recommend it. It's a very 67 was a big year of change for Hollywood, and we're still seeing the effects this day. So that's all I've got to say about that. That's it for this week. Stay classic. I know I got to be right, man, cause I can't get much stronger. Man, I've been waiting all night, man. That's how long I've been on ya.
Woo. Coming in with some Kanye West. Is this like called Stronger? Yeah, I remember at the time being like, you can't sample a song this new. But I'd never seen the video before, and Daft Punk is in the video, so yeah. He apparently had no problem with it. What
video,
was mine?
Which basically Kanye West in a 1997 PS1 cutscene.
Yes, Kanye West in a game from Quantum Theory. but yeah, we also have new releases. We the Kings, the eponymous debut. Trey Songs, Trey Day. Back of My Lack by Jay Holiday. Shades of Poison Trees by Dashboard Confessional. Magic by Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. Cowboy Town by Brooks and Dunn. Shooter's Nation by Baby Shambles. And Songs of Mass Destruction by Annie Lennox. Wow. What a big week for music. Jesus. Something for everybody there. And which I say to distract from the fact that I've heard none of it. Sorry, everybody. But we also have some news. October 1st? Oh, Epcot celebrates its 25th anniversary with a rededication ceremony.
This was this is way past the heyday of Disney anniversaries when they would always make a special out of it and show it on ABC. So it's a shame. So this, they just had a little rededication ceremony. It was on the news and stuff, but they didn't do like Kirstie Alley and all these celebrities.
We
shoot
dedicate
a dumb
this
special
as a
it.
Theme park and not a half-assed museum.
watch old specials of Disney anniversaries. They're always the best. This one was just kind of like, hey, it's 25th anniversary, and a lot of the stuff we said what happened hasn't happened yet.
You remember what does Epcot stand for?
Experimental Prototype Community
Prototype
of Tomorrow.
Community of Tomorrow. And from those Disneyland series tying every segment together, they show Walt Disney like, this is where, it wasn't a theme park, it was where people were supposed to live.
They were supposed to live there.
You were supposed to live there. It was supposed to be a convenient place for people to live and work and take tubes to everything. Yep. Kind of megalomaniacal in hindsight.
I still love Epcot. I think it's
me
great.
Me too. I wish that I understand why they have to change things, but if I had my dream virtual reality, please let me see 1950s and 1970s versions of what they think the future's going to look like. I want to never stop seeing that. Makes me very happy. 2007 in movies, The Game Plan is number one at the box office because that's what The Rocks get you. But in a bunch of other movies that couldn't topple Dwayne. Jesus. We have Feel the Noise. I've never heard of this.
The chicken dude from Breaking Bad, right? Isn't that
Giancarlo
Esposito?
Yeah, it's Gus Fring. And we also have The Heartbreak Kid, what was supposed to be the triumphant reunion between the Farrelly brothers and Ben Stiller. Yeah. In another R-rated comedy, although it's a remake of a movie.
It's a remake of an Elaine May movie, I'm already behind it because I like Elaine May.
Sorry, this is the movie the executives blamed Halo 3 for ruining the box office of.
Oh, it ruined itself.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. I should say I'm behind it in that I want the Elaine May version, and they should leave it alone.
Nice to meet you.
Bottoms up!
A comedy about finding the right girl.
So
this other girl doesn't bother her that you're a newlywed?
Rata!
I haven't exactly made it clear to her yet.
At the wrong time.
Where have you been?
Ha! From the second I fell for Miranda, I have not once cheated on her with my wife.
Ben Stiller.
Are you okay?
No, look, Lila, we're not okay. Stop!
The Heartbreak Kid.
Leave those mariachis alone.
So I tried to watch this a couple weeks ago because the first the first portion of it is set in San Francisco, mm-hmm. where Ben Stiller's character meets Malin Ackerman's character. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even get to the honeymoon part. I was just like, I can't stand this. It's just
the original
not
one had
funny.
Charles Grodin in it. Too.
Well, I mean, the premise makes it pretty hard to root for the main character. Isn't he falling in love with a different girl on his honeymoon?
On his honeymoon, yeah.
Yeah, he gets hastily married to Malin Ackerman, mm-hmm. and then realizes as the honeymoon starts that, like, oh yeah, I don't like a lot about her. Like, she sings too loud in the car.
Girl I see, Michelle,
and that's what happened to him in Along Came Polly. He should have learned.
Oh, Ben. But also,
Hank Azaria is going to steal your wife.
What is this? The Seeker, The Dark is Rising.
We're trying to find a new Harry Potter. That's what this is. I can't believe just watching this trailer and hearing them say. Everything I hate about movies like this, immediately.
Where am I?
You, Will, are the sign seeker. The chosen warrior to fight the dark.
The power of the light was divided and hidden in the form of six signs.
I'm
the
out.
Signs will call.
Jesus, yeah. It does like, was that all placeholder?
Man, yeah.
We'll find something to call Light in the Dark eventually.
Yeah, chosen one who will go find the multiple MacGuffins.
Yeah, we should.
To call it The Dark is Rising. Like, don't worry, it's not going to happen this one. Next movie is with The Dark. This one, it's just the setup.
There's a 30-20-10 question, pop culture fans. What's your favorite Harry Potter wannabe? I like Aragorn.
I was going to say that.
Well, you can have Percy Jackson Lightning Thief.
I'm a Sorcerer's Apprentice kind of guy.
No.
Oh, it can only work once.
Ian McShane wanted it to be called The Cocksey. And they wouldn't let him.
But is this the film also this week that won George Clooney the Oscar?
No.
No.
No, it won Tilda Swinton an Oscar.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So Michael Clayton.
Yep.
I'm Michael Clayton.
You're late. This is a $3 billion class action lawsuit. The architect of our defense has been arrested for running naked through a parking lot.
He's building a case against you, North.
Nobody's going to let him do that.
Let him? Who the hell's going to stop him?
Whoa, is that Sydney?
Sydney Pollack,
R.I.P.
Yeah, so.
What the heck is this about? I can't even
tell. Dude, I was confusing this with Syriana, which won George Clooney the Oscar, because I saw both and cannot remember which is which.
I always confuse it with Charlie Wilson's War, because it's another movie with a dude's name in it.
Mm-hmm. I confuse it with what I consider the George Clooney liberal guilt quadrilogy that keeps on happening. Usually he's exposing some real-world problem that he actively cares about, and that's kind of the only movies he bothers to make.
I want to make a movie with a guy's full name in it, mm-hmm. and then no one ever says the name, so no one has the titular line.
Ooh.
I like it.
That's pretty good. No, I like Michael Clayton. I mean, it's about he's like a corporate fixer, and then runs into realizing like the how deep does the corruption go kind of thing. But it's done nicely in shades of gray, and then nothing's all good, nothing's all bad. People know what the bad guys don't think that they're the bad guy. Tom Wilkinson gives a great performance. It's like an adult drama for grown-ups.
Yeah, that I should say that. That's what George Clooney tends to like to make, movies for fucking grown-ups.
Yeah, and so that's nice. You know, every now and then we need to have, movie films for grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
And Tilda Swinton is always awesome.
My dad's still alive, and he needs things to watch, and he doesn't care about Marvel movies. give him his Michael Clayton.
Yeah, he just had Dunkirk.
I guess you're going to have to go to bat for this, Matt J. The latest from Wes Anderson, Owen Wilson, Adrian Brody, Jason Schwartzman starring in The Darjeeling Limited.
What are you doing in this place?
Well, originally, I guess we came here on a spiritual journey.
You don't love me!
Yes, I do!
I love you too, but I'm going to mace you in the face!
But that didn't really pan out.
I wonder if the three of us could have been friends in real life. Not as brothers, but as people.
We
are not two,
we are one. The Weird Nose Brothers. About how silly and fun it is to be a white guy traveling through India. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate the part of this film that it's Wes Anderson taking these characters he's kind of worked on, like the Jason Schwartzman-esque, the Tenenbaums, these like hoity-toity, pompous idiots. And like really pushing them real far, and I like that about it. It's also just a gorgeous movie.
It is gorgeous.
Pretty.
Yeah,
but I hated this movie so much that I thought I was done with Wes Anderson. So thank God.
A lot of people did.
What was his next film? Mr. Fox?
It was Phantasm, Mr. Fox, right?
I can't. That immediately brought me back.
It's still his best movie.
Still
so
a huge Wes Anderson
fan. Best thing he's ever
yeah,
made.
But even Moonrise Kingdom I love. But like this I thought was like if you had a bunch of money and you wanted to shoot a parody of a Wes Anderson film.
It's up its own butt.
A bunch
big.
Of characters staring straight-facedly into mirrors, twee-ass music everywhere. I hate this fucking movie.
Was Adrian Brody in any other Wes Anderson movies?
I don't think so.
He just sticks out here. I'm like, what?
Isn't he in
the
like
other
the
two guys?
No.
No?
Mm-hmm. All right. No, Schwartzman and Owen Wilson are like regulars, and I can't picture them. I'm picturing them as their previous characters, not as whatever they are in this. But Adrian Brody, what are you doing here? Get out
he was
here.
In that short he put out last year around Christmas.
Well, speaking of shorts, is this the one that had the short with
Natalie
Portman?
Yes, Natalie Portman.
Unpronounceable, pretentious name.
Yes.
They put out online.
I was So it's the 10 years since I cared about an actress getting nude in a movie.
Oh, yeah, you saw her butt.
Yeah. I was like, wow, Natalie Portman's getting nude? Okay, I'll watch it.
But like you said, it's kind of like a parody of Wes Anderson movies. I did not care for it. At all. I have a tiny bit of affection for it for a personal reason we will get into around Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow. What a tease.
I'm teasing.
What a tease. Because everything else by Wes Anderson, Grand Budapest Hotel, that's the one I was thinking of. That movie is so fucking fun. I don't know. I'm scared to rewatch this, but I might. Because I don't know how one director has some movie that I really can't stand in his resume.
I will say, Wes Anderson, he has this thing where he keeps putting... So, Luke Wilson's not in this movie. Mm-hmm. He keeps putting Owen Wilson and Luke Wilson in movies where they're not brothers.
No.
And that's fucking ridiculous. They're the same person.
They're practically brothers in Bottle
Rocket.
Hey,
good to meet you. Who are you?
But they're not, though. They're friends. And same in Royal Tenenbaums. Like, it's so weird. Like, it makes sense that all three of these guys are brothers also. But, like, to keep putting them next to each other and say they're not related is like, what are you doing to me? This movie's fantasy.
I wish they would have just make this a Bottle Rocket sequel. Let's just do that.
Yeah, I could have done that.
Let's just do that because it's essentially because he's one of three brothers, right?
Yeah, three Wilsons.
Yeah, the three the Wilsons are Owens in most of them because he writes them, doesn't he? I think he wrote everything up to Tenenbaums.
He wrote Rushmore. He wrote Tenenbaums. He wrote Bottle Rocket.
And that's the other morbidly notable thing is that Owen Wilson is playing the a person who survives a suicide attempt, and he had to go on a press tour for this movie having survived a suicide attempt.
No, that was later.
No,
wasn't
I don't think it was.
It was like 2009.
No, I think he didn't do a lot of press for Cars because I think that came out at the time. And then he actually showed his face in public
to promote this movie. Luke Wilson's the one who found him.
Oof.
Isn't that crazy?
I did not know any of this.
Now,
was Needle in the Hay playing?
That's what I was just going to say. And it's even weird to watch that scene now. Oh. Even though it's not Owen, even though it's not Owen, it's like they're still so similar that like watching that scene's really, it messes me up. Because I love Owen Wilson.
Even without that context, that scene's amazing.
Yeah, and Wes Anderson finally back again. I'm so glad I don't have to hate him forever. But I just hated this movie, and his next movie is animated again and looks fucking rad. I cannot wait.
It's also about another country, so things might get dicey.
Rushmore is probably my favorite, but man, I could go to bat for Life Aquatic all goddamn.
My favorite is
really, really
Mr. Fox.
Good. Really good. I need to watch that again because I have never been in love with a movie that much on a first viewing. Just really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Really like that film.
One of the three animated films of the Criterion Collection, which is a real pain in the ass.
Watership Down.
Fantastic Planet.
Fantastic Planet. Oh,
look at
me!
You can count Akira because it was on Laserdisc, but it's not numbered. It's not a spine number, so it's dicey.
Darjeeling Limited.
I just watched Fantastic Planet.
Did you?
Yeah.
It's great, right?
I fucking love that movie.
It's fucking great.
Watch some of that guy's other movies.
It's weird.
They're crazy.
Man, it is great.
Too scared.
They're weirder.
Hey. Look, we have a comment section, 302010.net, or you can go to lasertimepodcast.com and find it there. Go to bat for Darjeeling Limited. I don't want to hate this film, but it really gave me a bad taste in my mouth when I saw it. But anyway, we can move into TV of 2007. Jesus,
so we have two infamous premieres and two good premieres to talk about. Let's start with the shit ones. October 1st, 2007, Dr. Steve-O debuts on the USA Network.
Yeah, dude!
A reality show where Steve-O acts as a doctor to help men overcome their fears with challenges and shit.
Steve-O
like
needs
that.
More fears.
What?
Yeah.
No, see, I like...
That's a terrible idea.
The only thing because it was on USA, I think it aired after Monday Night Raw, and Steve-O went on an episode of Monday Night Raw, and a guy... One of the bigger wrestlers, his name was Umaga, started to beat him up, and Steve-O wasn't selling properly, like he was getting back up, and that basically gave Umaga the reason to beat the shit out of Steve-O, which is like that's total jackass thing to do. Like
I can't remember if he was sober at this point, but
Steve-O's become like a great dude. Like he's out there doing stunts in the name of like a sea, like fuck SeaWorld. I don't know. I really love how, what Steve-O's become. A sober guy as a sober dude. Love Jack.
Also this week, Cavemen debuted on ABC featuring the Geico Caveman. Now,
not everything needs a clip, but I want to hope that no clip of this exists.
Yeah, it's my heart just, I can't stand. I can't bear to watch any amount of the Geico Cavemen getting their own
the
TV
Geico
show.
Cavemen. What?
Even if Nicole was one of them for some reason.
What were they thinking?
Desperation. Someone might help co-finance the show. I have no idea.
Did they really think we're celebrating our fifth season of Cavemen? Did they think that was ever going to happen?
And they were thinking.
Welcome to season seven of It's What You Do.
Yeah. they shot their wad. They should have waited for the gecko.
But it goes even deeper than what were they thinking, because it's about diversity and how certain people, because of their backgrounds, aren't given the opportunities that other people are, and they're all played by white guys.
They make the cavemen a struggling class in modern society, right?
I watched this pilot fairly recently just to do it, and it's about that, and it's a little awkward. Although, like, if they had cast it better, it would be kind of funny. It does have some good jokes.
Nick Kroll, I know, was on it.
Nick Kroll's in it. He's pretty good in it. It just should not be a bunch of white guys talking about how hard it is to be anything, especially in California.
Yeah.
A much better debut on ABC this week was Pushing Daisies.
It's a great show.
Yeah, debuted the next day. It was a comedy drama from Brian Fuller, who did Wonderfalls and would do
Heroes.
Hannibal later on, and starred Lee Pace, who some people might recognize as Ronan the Accuser with Under All That Makeup. He was also really good on Wonderfalls. But yeah, this, just like Wonderfalls, is a short-lived series. I think this one was two seasons.
Is it worth revisiting?
I love it. I watched it probably like 3 or 4 years after it was on TV, and I binged it. It's really good, really charming, really beautifully shot because it's Brian Fuller. Mm-hmm. But I love the concept, which is Lee Pace, he plays this baker who has the power to bring things back from the dead just by touching them.
Mm-hmm. But if he touches them again,
They'll die. And if you let somebody live for more than a minute, someone else dies in reality. So it's like kind of a don't push the button sort of situation. Mm. But the whole twist is, in the first episode, he falls in love at first sight with this girl, and he touches her to get her to live. And, you know, the irony is like, well, A, that somebody died because he did that. I think, it was her dad. And the other irony is he can't ever touch her again because everything he touches dies.
Oh.
Except for the pies, which are delicious. But yeah, really charming show, really good cast, and it sadly only got two seasons and has one of the most hastily thrown together finales, where it's like the last 2 minutes are just like this poorly animated thing. They're like, and everybody turned out fine.
I stumbled ass backwards into this because of research and a stupid incident. God damn it. Okay, we were doing Talking Simpsons, where we sometimes explain reference, and we were doing Grandpa versus Sexual Inadequacy, and I can't think of another way to describe the snake oil salesman, the person who goes from town to town peddling miracle medicines, than the Jim Dale character from Pete's Dragon. Pusa McQuatzo, Pusa McQuatty. Like, I love that guy. And
Profits come rolling in.
And so I just watched that, and then I went to camping in Big Sur, and I walked into the Henry Miller Museum, the guy who wrote Tropic of Cancer. There's, no working bathrooms, a hippie girl working there, but she's listening to Harry Potter on audiobook. Yeah. And that's Jim Dale, the same guy, the snake oil salesman from he's might be one of the most heard people in the universe, because the Harry Potter audiobook is one of the most successful audiobooks, and he not only reads it, he does voices and characterizations of every think about it, every Harry Potter character you've ever known. Right. Some people have never read it, they've experienced through Jim Dale. And I'm looking up his bio, and he's the narrator for the show too.
Yeah.
So if you know the Harry Potter audiobook, you know the narrator of Pushing Daisies, and that immediately, I want to hear more of this guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's very storybook-esque, a lot of narration.
Yeah, it's a fairy tale show. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Also, a very early role from, I forget if she's Garfunkel or Oates, but Ricky Lindholm.
Wow.
She plays the model who is not allowed to eat anything, and then she gets obsessed with his pies.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who didn't get that much work before or after. Like, This is one of the last things I remember seeing Audrey in. Audrey from Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. She's in, the, in this.
She was primarily, I think, famous for being that character in the play, and I didn't really ever see her in anything
else. I think she's mostly stage.
Yeah.
And speaking of stage, Kristen Chenoweth.
Kristen Chenoweth.
Was, like, so charming and cute on this show, and, like, she's barely on TV.
Just
she's
out of curiosity, so much... did you guys catch this while it was airing?
No.
Okay. I saw it on Netflix.
Yeah. Okay.
Still, at this point, almost 10 years ago.
Well, yeah, it's still one of those shows that, like, floats to the top of your streaming platform, so I think people keep finding it.
Yeah.
And
it's like Freaks and Geeks.
I like Dead Like Me. Who knows?
Yeah. Also this week, October 4th, 2007, 30 Rock starts its second season with the episode Seinfeld Vision, where NBC invents technology that can digitally insert Seinfeld into NBC programming. And this is NBC programming in 2007, so I love all the stuff he's put into.
So for the month of October, all of our primetime shows will feature a computerized guest appearance from Mr. Jerry
Seinfeld. If you didn't kill her, why didn't you stay?
Quit grilling me!
Save the cheerleader. Save the world.
Chiarito Square. Seco Square.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I said.
Seinfeld Vision.
Deal or no deal?
I'll take that deal.
Does Seinfeld know you're doing this?
Jerry's in Europe with his family right now, but by the time he gets back, Seinfeld Vision will be a monster hit, and his kids will go to school, and their friends will say, I really loved your dad in that episode of Medium last night, and he's gonna love it.
God, so that was Heroes, Deal or No Deal, and what?
On Order.
SVU.
Yeah. And this was to promote B-movie, right?
I think
which
so.
Was part of that whole business.
I don't know why I remember that so much.
But I just also that like the dire straits NBC is in at this point. That those three shows, and then I remember like when he's saying that line, we saw you on Medium. I'm like, what is he gonna say? What's the fourth show that they could have put him into? Nobody remembers Medium. Come on,
that show was on for years, wasn't it? Yeah. And that's I do love those subtle jabs. Yeah. I don't know, like you can see studio notes. Story arcs on 30 Rock. The idea that like NBC's struggling for its
Cable
next Seinfeld
town.
And you're the best we got. Be more Seinfeld. Well, what if we digitally put him in every episode?
Yeah. We've been purchased by Cabletown.
this is one of my favorite jokes where Jerry thinks Liz is making fun of him, but she's just crying, and that's how she talks when she cries. She talks like Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah, that's it for TV, but also a couple of games to talk
games.
About.
Mm.
Couple things that actually tie into the previous week.
Yeah.
On October 5th, Bungie announces that they're becoming an independent studio. This is 1 week after Halo 3 came out.
Now, I went and tried to do research for this because I didn't understand how it could happen. Microsoft owned Bungie outright, who makes their flagship product that has just broken all records.
Yeah.
And a week later, it's like they're allowed to leave.
Did
like,
they just buy themselves out?
I think there's probably a bit of that, but then... Project Gotham 4 also came out.
Yeah. But with Bungie, they did Halo ODST and Halo Reach for Microsoft after becoming independent.
Yes,
so
but
it's still
but
like
when you look at like Bizarre, say making Project Gotham Racing, I don't think Activision acquired them to continue making games that they wanted to do. The Project Gotham series, they wanted to have a development studio working on whatever they wanted them to work on. I think it stands to reason. Someone like Microsoft shouldn't want to buy and employ a publisher.
Yeah.
You would want to temporarily use the services of a video game developer, not pay salaries year-round whether they're developing something or not, or be assigned to put them on projects.
Yeah.
But it seemed you really let them go? That's insane. Like,
I mean, it's in the sense that like Halo is probably going to be a big success without Bungie developing it. Like now 343 does it. Yeah, I don't know if it's the developer's fault or it's just like... exhaustion with the series. That's why people
happened with Gears of War. They had two great series that sort of kind of petering out on the same formula.
And
I say this on the eve of like playing a shitload of Destiny 2, which is what Halo would have become.
Yeah.
And maybe Microsoft wouldn't let them do that
because
it's not the same game.
Yeah.
I won't go into it. Diana already looks
bored. But you mentioned Project Gotham Racing 4, which came out this week, a week after Bizarre was purchased by Activision. So, some weird ships crossing in the night there.
Mm-hmm.
But also, some other big game releases this week. Super Mario Bros. The Lost Levels released on Wii Virtual Console, which is notable in that that was Super Mario Bros. 2 in Japan.
Yeah.
But it didn't come out in America until like the 90s as part of Super Mario All-Stars. But that wasn't the real version of it because it was souped up with new graphics. This is the first time
America
that without emulation that you could play Super Mario Brothers 2 Lost Levels.
The original Super Mario 2. And I have on our YouTube channel, I love Rick Mile, and he did a series of Nintendo commercials. And they played up the fact that, like, these are the hardest Mario levels ever. You're not ready for them. But that's why they didn't release it in America. It looked too similar and is fucking mean.
It's so punishing. Like,
we streamed it. It's really hard.
There's mushrooms that kill you.
Yes.
And... there's just instances where you're gonna jump over something and you think like, oh, of course I'm supposed to make this jump, and they're like, oh no, there's this brick right here that you didn't take into account.
And there's an entire genre for that now.
It's what Mario Maker became. It's just like, let's make the most punishing version of Mario possible. But also this week, from Nintendo, The Legend of Zelda: Phantom Hourglass, the first DS Legend of Zelda game, I believe.
The first Wind Waker spinoff.
Yeah.
One of the first Zelda sequels, period.
Yeah.
Like a direct follow-up. That world, I think that Zelda timeline has the most sequels because of this and Spirit Tracks, which is a much better game.
I know this game is beloved, but I think it does have one of my least favorite things with the DS, which is using the microphone. Like, didn't you have to blow into it to make the tornadoes?
I was going to say using the stylus to walk. That was my thing.
Oh, that too.
No, I hated it because Spirit Tracks is a game you're on a train. Yeah. Super cute and fun. This was a game where you'd go and do stuff, and you'd go back to a single temple just go deeper within it. And
I keep going.
A lot of backtracking.
Yeah. Having to go back to the same place every time to progress.
I think because Wind Waker was just so big and trying to replicate that on the DS, the only way they could was to make you go back to the same place.
It was Valiant, but man, Spirit Tracks is so much better. Yeah. I hope that series is addressed again, because when I wanted amiibos, even though some kind gentleman sent me all of them, all I wanted was Toon Link and Little Mac, because I love Toon Link. And I can't believe that's how they officially refer to him. It seems like it'd be pejorative.
It should be like WWE.
Toon Link. That came out. But I'm sure it reviewed well.
That's it for the games this week.
That's it for the games. But you know what? We're not done yet, because we have comments. Mm-hmm. This show is all about our personal anecdotes. Sometimes we don't do our due diligence when it comes to movies, or we write shit off. So it's always nice to hear you chime in with your anecdotes. We liked it so much, we do a bi-weekly show just about your comments, because they're super fucking fun. It's like a show that you get to make. You can leave your comment at lasertimepodcast.com or 302010.net, and you can listen to that show on patreon.com/lasertime. Patreon is how we're supported. We are pretty much crowdfunded and have to be NPR all year round. But we give you exclusive shows, movie commentaries, video commentaries of wrestling matches and cartoons, and I got something spooky plan for you in the month of October. So please join us at the low cost of $5 a month. You'll get a ton of extra shit, our utter thanks, and you'll keep this dumb little train a moving. So thank you so much. But for example, Banquo Stepson has some local flavor for Soulja Boy, who's cranked that turn 10
2 weeks ago.
Fun fact, Soulja Boy lived in my hometown, Batesville.
Go away, Batesville,
Missouri,
Mississippi.
Microsoft
multiple sclerosis, MS, for a few years before he became famous. When he blew up, everyone seemed to have a Soulja Boy story, and Crank That was played at most places on repeat for months. There were even rumors of them shooting a segment of the show that about Soulja Boy's life at my high school, but that never panned out. Eventually, the craze died down, but you would occasionally still see Soulja Boy's lime green Ferrari driving through town a year or two after he blew up. That's what I hear Minneapolis was like when Prince became big. But yes, that this almost concludes our show. Diana gets to tell us about the rockin' deaths of the period of, September 29th through October 5th?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this is 87, 97, and 07.
In 87, we had a couple. Jean-Henri, the playwright, wrote Antigone. The Virgin of Antigone, 77.
It just felt like you were on the wrong show before.
I love throwing those out. Henry Ford II, who's actually Henry Ford's grandson, but he was 70.
Okay.
Still in charge of the company, he was. Mm. And in 1997, we hit Roy Lichtenstein, who was 73.
Who's that?
The art that's like a giant comic panel blown up.
Oh.
Pop art.
The pop art of like a crying lady on the phone, like, where is my love? And there's.
Got it.
You know,
oh, I saw some of that. It's either the SF MoMA or the New York MoMA.
Yeah. There's a bunch of it.
There's a bunch of it.
Yep.
But as always.
Passed away 20 years ago.
We can't really close out without a little bit of a quiz that involves. Oh, not too early.
Oh, birthday is a doodly doo, a ding dong.
The birthday quiz, which Diana handles, Matt J. might give some stiff competition to.
All right, now I think this one's up for grabs.
Okay.
Okay, so someone we've talked about in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Born September 29th, 1942, turning 75 in Blackburn, Lancashire, where the holes are rather small, but you have to count them all.
What the
f- Beatles joke!
Okay, okay.
His film and TV work are all over the place, and they include the often...
Anthony Hopkins?
No. The often referenced, if it's Tuesday, then this must be Belgium. Roots, he was Judas
Morgan
in...
Morgan
Freeman? Judas in Jesus of Nazareth. John Wick, Kung Fu Panda.
Ian McShane.
Oh, Ian McShane. Damn.
Never gonna get that.
Where did
Dang.
I talk
well
about
done.
It? If it's Tuesday, it must be Belgium.
I mean, we talked about it 2 or 3 weeks ago because Courtney Cox was in a TV
oh,
movie
Jesus.
About it.
Yep.
What a weird show this
ADD
is.
ADD the show.
You know, I was feeling you were going to get that, so mm-hmm. I put Last of Sheila towards the bottom because you're like the only other person I know who's seen that.
That movie's real fun.
And that movie is so freaking good, guys. Yeah. Last of Sheila. Great.
Only movie written by Stephen Sondheim and Anthony Perkins?
Yep.
Whoa. Oh, okay. I'm a big Sondheim fan. So
it's weird. But yes, you can find out more at 302010.net and lasertimepodcast.com. We do other shows like Laser Time, which is topic-based, not date-based, as well as Talking Simpsons, a chronological look at every episode of The Simpsons every single Wednesday. And throughout this month, a weekly short look at A Nightmare on Elm Street with my buddy Lizzie Cuevas. Check that out. It's been really, really fun. Special guests on that show and everything.
And on our Patreon, patreon.com/lasertime, in addition to the 302010 bonus show, we have Bonus Time, which we talk about stuff that we like in 2017. And we also have a lot of movie commentaries, I think over 100 at this point, and they're often movies that have an anniversary that we've talked about on the show. So if you want to hear more about those movies, listen to our commentaries.
Yeah. And if you want to hear more about video games, there's Video Games Apocalypse. It's an entire show just about the video games, and I'm talking movies and stuff on the Twitter. At
Le Cine Nerd.
Speaking of old Disney stuff we were talking about today, I do a Twitter called Disney at Disney 80s 90s, Disney 80s 90s, where I tweet Disney stuff from the company from the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah, baby. All right, taking us out, Jesus Christ, the Pushing Daisies theme.
It's a great theme.
Yeah.
All right, see you next week, people.